today. I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this, the concept of Man Show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here with David Niles. We have no one. We have no Jim. We have no one here but us.
Just us.
This evening. It's been a good day thus far.
Yes.
Today is...
It's a beautiful day today.
It's a beautiful day in Oklahoma. Today is also the anniversary, the death anniversary of my grandfather.
Oh.
Or the birthday of his...
Eternal rest to him.
Yes. So if you could, in your charity, offer up a prayer for Jerry Minahan, my grandfather. He was one of... Or he was the first... He and my grandmother were the first ones to get married in the Catholic Church in Seminole.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
In Seminole, Oklahoma. So they were the first couple to get married in Seminole, Oklahoma.
In that church.
In the Catholic Church. Which is cool. Pretty cool.
That is cool. I was at a graveyard?
Cemetery?
Thank you.
Yes.
Yep. That's the word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually very tired.
Yeah.
But...
Well, we had a late night last night.
Like this, if there's a candidate for like having a day where you struggle with your words, today's the day.
Today's going to be one of those days. Well, like buckle up, guys. This will be fun for you.
Yeah. But I ran into a Minahan tombstone. Are not a lot of Minahans in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
No. No, there's not. There is Minahans in Sand Springs. I don't know how they're related or if how we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, Minahan is an Irish name and means little monk.
I dig it.
Which is kind of cool.
Totally.
So, but yeah, last night we had our traditional whiskey baby bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we started years, well, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
A decade ago. That's weird.
It's happening, bro.
We are getting old. Is that you and me and Juan... whenever we have a child, we get together in celebration of Thanksgiving for life. We get together and we buy a nice whiskey bottle, like a whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And one that we normally wouldn't afford, but if you throw in money, he throws in money, which by the way, you owe me money.
I was about to say, so I actually meant to bring you money today, but I forgot.
if everybody throws in money, then all of a sudden you can buy a nicer bottle of whiskey.
Yeah.
And so last night we had the Redbreast Irish whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
It was in
sherry,
aged in PX sherry casks. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it was just delicious. It was so good. And so I got the Irish whiskey because Minahan and John. Like, we found out that John was conceived, that Haley was pregnant in Ireland on our wedding anniversary. So.
He wasn't conceived in Ireland.
No, we found out that
she was pregnant.
He had already been conceived.
While you were in Ireland.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. That's why I picked cool. The Irish whiskey. So anyway, we stayed up.
It's a great tradition.
You know, we are getting old. We're, knocking on 40 here in a couple years. And so we stayed up.
You are.
I am. Yeah. You're still...
I'm like way younger than you.
Yeah. So we stayed up way later than what... I think we stayed up till 1 o'clock.
Oh, dude, I didn't go to bed till 2. When I got home, I had farm chores.
Oh, awesome.
If you can imagine that.
That's awesome.
Because I got sick piglets still.
Do you?
Yeah, and so I was having to go out there to...
Take care of
them? I have one of them in isolation, and so I need to... He's not eating, so I need to like go out there and feed him. I did get some penicillin for him today. Which, you know, you can just like go to the farmer's co-op and you can buy like a huge bottle of penicillin. It says like
not for human use,
mm-hmm. and you shouldn't use it because mm-hmm. that's what it says in the bottle. Your doctor is gonna definitely agree. That being said, I'm pretty sure it's the same. You shouldn't use it.
Right.
Don't go to the farmer's co-op.
This is not an ivermectin.
And get yourself some, think that I'm going to go get some penicillin for me. Okay, right. Don't do that. Now, if it's like an apocalyptic scenario, but like totally, that's going to save your life. But it isn't. The thing is, it isn't.
Don't do that.
You can like go and get regular human medicine at the human medicine store.
Pharmacy.
Yep, as opposed to the animal store. So, but anyway, I did give him penicillin shot today.
Good.
He's got like this weird kind of arthritis that the pigs get. And he's been like really, this piglet, his name's Alfred, he's been really circling the drain. And I am really hoping that he pulls through.
One way or the other.
But I found out. I feel like I'd have definitively diagnosed his condition. He's joint ill. That's actually the name of it. There's a scientific name too, but farmers don't use it. So it's bacteria. Should take care of it. We'll see. And by next week, next week's episode, I'll let you know.
Okay, good. So this evening we're having Smoke Wagon malted straight rye whiskey. Our friends over there at Smoke Wagon and... Las Vegas, Nevada. Go follow them on Instagram. They're a great follow. They actually sent us a bottle. Like years ago, they sent us a bottle.
Yeah.
You remember this?
Yeah, I do.
And we loved the bottle because it was, you know, it's very ornate. It's like a
it's
nice...
It's got Latin on it.
Yeah, it's a very nice
What does
bottle.
Bibamus moriendum est mean?
I did not know.
I don't know what moriendum means. Bibamus is like drink. Bibere means to drink.
So probably in memory?
Like... So it's something about like in
drinking memory of.
I don't know what moriendum means in the break.
We'll
look it up.
Okay.
and then we'll let.
But anyway,
you know.
So that's what we're having this evening. It is like I said, a straight rye. It is, let's see, 51% rye, 49% malted barley, and has a sweet and creamy flavor with notes of caramel, cereal, and malt. The rye gives you a cinnamon spice, black pepper, and smoky note at the end.
It definitely does.
So we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
It's also strong. Like it's almost 59% alcohol.
Okay. So be careful.
Yeah.
Mmm. Well, that is...
It's very good.
Very flavorful.
Has a lot of flavor.
Wow.
I don't drink a lot of rye. I probably say that every time we have one.
Just delicious.
But there's a lot, kind of a natural complexity that I think you get with a rye.
Man, that's really
they also tend to be on the hot side
because
of that rye flavor. And this one is, but it's not like hot in a bad way. It's just hot in a rye way.
The rye way. Yeah. Man, that is really nice. Yeah, I really, really like that. So anyway, go Smoke Wagon. Go follow them on Instagram.
Is all of their stuff rye?
No. No, they have...
Okay.
They have bourbons.
They do other ones? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So go check them out. Anyway, so what else has been going on in the Niles household?
Man, do you just want to hear more farm stories? Is it?
No.
I can tell you more farm stories, but...
But that's all you got?
For right
how,
now.
How are the girls?
They're doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're excited to be like approaching the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can sense it sort of.
So I told you this the other night, but I'll share it on the show. Is one of the things that we took up as a family during Lent is praying Compline together as a family.
Mm.
And you know, so half the family goes on one side, the other half goes on the other, and we go back and
forth. Do you chant it?
We do not. We're taking baby steps. Like, because the first couple of times was pretty rough.
Yeah.
It was pretty rough sledding, because there's times where like there's a leader, and then there's response, and then there's like this side and then this side.
Yeah, exactly.
And so like you have to know which...
Honestly, it is a little bit confusing. The first time I tried to pray the Liturgy of the Hours, it wasn't Compline. It was probably morning prayer or something, or night prayer. I was very frustrated. And in fact, like I kind of got mad at how it didn't make sense to me. The book I had didn't clearly, you know,
explain it.
And I was also the only one who didn't know what to do. And so it's like embarrassing. And, you know, honestly, for a couple of years, it put a bad taste in my mouth for praying the Liturgy of the Hours, which I've since realized is silly and foolish, that the Liturgy of the Hours is a beautiful prayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but it is, if you don't know what to do, and especially in a group, if you're by yourself,
it doesn't matter.
You just read the whole thing.
Yeah.
You just read all of it. And in a group, and it's different. Like, if there's two of you, you're going to do it a certain way. But if there's three or more of you, now you can like do the parts.
Right.
Like what you're talking about, a leader, and then also this side and that side.
Right. So it's been really great. What I did is I bought every family member of the book from Clear Creek. So here's a book of, actually has Prime and Compline together.
Okay.
So everybody has their own book. And it just kind of starts the prayer off well, because everybody has their own. We're doing this all together. And we did this evening even, and it was just like so beautiful to do together as
Wonderful.
A family.
That's
so
a great idea.
Hopefully we'll continue this after Lent as well. So we'll be right back.
Lent is a time of great renewal. God calls us into uncommon freedom in Jesus Christ, but many obstacles stand in our way. Lent provides us with a time to enter into the spiritual battle. We must face God's enemies, the demons who tempt us to fall into sin. We must also face up to our own weakness and all that holds us back from entering into God's promises. If Lent has been underwhelming thus far for you, I recommend Lent with Exodus. With new features like Teach Me to Pray, weekly spiritual guides with Father Boniface Hicks, and Praying for the Dead on Mondays with men from all over the world, Lent with Exodus will provide structure and order during this penitential season. A 14-day free trial for all new users. Go to download.exodus90.com or search for Exodus 90 in the App Store.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking Smoke Wagon rye whiskey, straight rye whiskey. We looked it up. Bibamus morientum est means, let us drink, for we must die. We're totally going to die, so let's have a drink.
Nice. Which is really fitting for the topic today, because we're going to be actually talking about preparation for death.
Dying.
Which is coincidental. We did not plan that out, but sometimes it just works out
the
that
Lord
way.
Wills.
Hey, did you know that
Deus vult.
I heard somebody was saying on a podcast not too long ago that the younger generations are not drinking, like, hardly at all.
Really?
Yeah, that basically our generation is kind of like the last drinkers, is what they're saying.
Interesting. I did not know this.
I didn't know that either, but apparently
some
of the younger generations are not, you know, drinking as much. And I'm not saying that like, we're just heavy drinkers, but like, when they go out to social settings, it's not about like, hey, let's go grab a beer. I guess it's like, let's go grab a coffee or tea, or I don't know.
Okay, I mean, I like those things too.
But yeah.
Not as good
as
a beer.
I just found out, like, just heard that. I was like, wow, that's
Well, yeah, I wonder what that means. I wonder, like, what the cause of that is. Like, are they rejecting something? Or
probably,
are they,
like, for health, I think.
Maybe.
Would be my guess.
There are also the younger generations, they tend to imbibe in medical...
marijuana
a lot, which just this week there was a big study came out, like, basically if you smoke even like once a month, your risk for heart failure, like, or heart disease skyrockets. And it doesn't actually matter if you smoke it or like you ingest use edibles. It. Like THC is terrible for your heart.
No kidding.
And they've just, this is the kind of thing they've never studied before because THC was a Schedule 3 drug.
Right. Or Schedule 1.
Or Schedule 1, yeah. Whichever the highest schedule, schedule like one, the most rigorous. And so you can't, the definition of those is that you, these are drugs, have no medical use, and therefore cannot be studied. You can't do clinical trials on. So they're, I think it still is still Schedule 1, so I'm not really sure how they're doing this study, but it was a fairly, like, it's been kind of big news. Because everybody thought and has been told, like, oh, it has no harmful side effects, you know, like, it's not bad for you.
Right.
Turns out it's actually very bad for you. And it's like, you're also, your risk of stroke goes way up.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Didn't know that either.
So, there you go. That's, we're talking about death. That could be why you die.
That would not be fun.
And you, yeah.
Not a good
hope,
way to go.
Hope you're ready.
So we're pulling this evening, it's called, the book is called Preparation of Death, Considerations for on Eternal Truths. Considerations on Eternal Truths. It's by St. Alphonsus Liguori, who I just don't feel like gets enough credit.
Dude, I love him. He's so good.
He's
kind of dense.
He also is very bold.
Yeah, that he is. You're right.
You know, it's not necessarily that he's, I wouldn't say he's dense, like Aquinas dense.
No. Well, but sometimes he's like, he can go over your head, I think.
He can get into the weeds a little bit. But he's very bold in his statements. Because he's a doctor of the church. Mm-hmm. I believe... Man, it was either... Somebody can correct me. But it's either like Pius the 12th. I think Pius the 12th made him a doctor of the church. Or maybe the 9th. Anyway.
I do not even pretend to know.
But he's out of the 1700s. He's the founder of the Redemptorist. Redemptrists. Order, and he's considered like the moral theologian, like the moral doctor of the church, so to speak. He's also a patron of lay people because of his productivity, because of how productive he was as a just as a person.
That's interesting,
right?
Something implicit in that, that, wow, this priest gets a lot done. He's sort of like a layperson, you know, as if like priests typically don't get much done, you know, like, isn't that a little bit kind of, that's kind of funny.
I think it's a little interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he wrote a whole lot in his lifetime. However, not all of his writings have been translated into English, but they're making their way through.
Isn't that crazy that, like, yes, he's a doctor of the church. It's not like he's from the 300s, you know?
Right. It's 1700s. Like, we're not talking that long ago.
Yeah, where, like, it's reasonable that some of his writings would have been translated into English at the time, you know, like, at publication. Like, oh, let's go ahead and put this in. I mean, would have been a reasonable thing. But, well, and actually, you know, my brother-in-law, I've mentioned this on the show before.
Worth saying again.
Is, I don't know what you would call it, but, like, the official publisher of the English translation of his work on Confession, which is one of the major, like, his most important writings that was, like, contributed to his becoming a doctor of the church. So my brother-in-law, Father Sean O'Brien, did not translate it. There was some doctors, you know, doctoral people in the 70s who did it, who translated it, and, like, never could get it published. And so he found, like, their PDF on the internet and said, hey, can I self-publish this on Amazon? And they're like, sure, go for it. We've been trying to get it done for years, and nobody. And I think they're just too old to know about self-publishing.
Okay.
Because they were, you know, doing this a long time ago. So yeah, he just downloaded their PDF, sent it to Amazon, and now you can buy it. It's super, super cheap. He priced it so he makes as little money as is allowed. I think he gets like a penny
per book
every time someone buys the book.
Do you remember what it's called?
I don't.
Okay.
I can text him.
But so we're pulling from this, and I thought this was just a good thing to be thinking about as we're entering into the Passion Tide, you know, in 2 weeks. Passion Sundays in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're entering into Holy Week here very soon. And so throughout, this is the time of year, this is the time in Lent that thing, or if you're doing Exodus 90 or Lent with Exodus, you know, it's this time, uh-huh. It's the time period where, man, it's just dragging and you're kind of waning a little bit. You're kind of like wavering, like, oh, maybe I'll relax this. Maybe, you know, you kind of, the noonday devil, so to speak, kind of creeps in.
Yeah.
And you start playing mental games with yourself, like, oh, if I give up this, like, well, I'll just do it this time. You know, and you just kind of, you kind of get weak. And like, yeah. So, but this is the time to really double down. This is the time to recommit yourself to these things. Because again, the reason why we're going through this is to die to self so that way we can love Christ even more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And because the whole end of man is unity with God. This is like the purpose of man. This is the purpose of your soul, is to be in union with God for all of eternity. This is why you were created. This is why he made you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So Father Sean just texted me. He said it's Guide for Confessors.
Nice.
Is the name of the book.
By St. Alphonsus Liguori.
Yeah.
So in this book, he...
But yes, back to what you're saying. Yeah, like, sorry. We're less than 30 days. I mean, we've got less than a month. So like the finish line...
Is approaching.
When you're running a race, you don't slow down. You, like, as you get closer to the finish line...
It's almost like you run to win.
You actually like, all right... and yeah, if anybody's ever run like the 800 is like
one of the worst.
Worst. It's so bad.
I mean, 300 hurdles are worse, but
are they?
800.
Are they?
Yeah,
but I never ran any hurdles. I didn't really do much running. I'm just pretty slow. I'm not all that fast on my feet. But I've run the 800 before, and you're like, by the time you come around, you see you're gonna die. But it's time to give everything you got, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are in Lent.
Right. It's like you see the finish line and like just stick to, like this is the time where you can see a lot of fruits in your suffering, because it's almost like there's layers that are being peeled back and you're understanding like, oh, am I actually attached to this unhealthily, like in a disordered way, or you know, like, and it takes a while for you to come to that realization, for that to actually expose itself, right? And so this is a very important time during Lent to recommit yourself, even if you feel like, oh, my Lent hasn't been that great, it's not what I've been wanting, or maybe Exodus 90, you kind of fallen off a little bit and you've kind of relaxed some of the disciplines. Like, this is the time to kind of gird your loins and get back up on the saddle and like say like, no, I'm going to finish strong.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard to do. Like, once you kind of you cut yourself some slack.
Right.
It is hard to rein it in.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to like man up and make this conscious act of the will. I'm doing it. Like, you need to like repent a little bit, even though like Exodus 90 is a voluntary program that, you know, right. It's not like, oh, you're committing sin by taking a hot shower. But there is like, you have to like do a mental exercise of repentance. Like, I shouldn't have done it because I committed. You know, like, I'm sorry for doing it. I'm back on track.
And get back
on. If you don't have that, like, repentance, so to speak, then you're not going to be able to rein it in, you know? You need to, like,
mentally
restore things.
Yeah. So anyway, so I thought, like, this is a good opportunity to kind of talk about death. We've talked about death on the show before, you know, talking about how you can't escape it. And then we've also talked about kind of like deathbed conversions not too long ago, and how, you know, you shouldn't wish.
Yeah, Thomas A. Kempis, I think, what was that? That book also may have been, it was something very similar in title, like Preparations for Death, which is what we're reading today.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, Thomas A. Kempis's book is very, very similar to what we're going to be reading today here from Alphonsus Liguori, where... kind of walking you through a hypothetical scenario of, hey, right. Here's a man on his deathbed, you know, how does that apply to you?
Yeah, so he takes into three considerations. So he takes three people into consideration that are dying, right? A secular guy, basically, a Christian man who hasn't been living his faith well, and then a just man, namely like a Christian who has lived his life well, and how they consider death at that moment of, hey, the time is up, you're about to die.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage?
Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the great, the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Sipping on a little bit of this Smoke Wagon malted straight rye whiskey. And we're talking about death. St. Alphonsus Liguori has a book entitled Preparation for Death, Considerations on Eternal Truths. This is another reason why I think that if Alphonsus Liguori was here in today's world, like in the modern world, he would not be loved. He would not be liked. Because he talks about these eternal truths, and like I said, he's pretty hard-hitting. He like takes bold stances.
Yeah.
And a lot of them would be considered probably, in this day and age, not as passionate, not as compassionate maybe, or maybe not as...
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're not, less pastoral.
Yeah, maybe that's the word I was thinking of. But it's because he desires to know, like, to convey the truth to everybody because he desires and he hopes that everybody is saved, right?
Yeah.
And so, like,
he's very blunt. He's not, and he doesn't lack charity in his writing at all.
So, again, so he considers three different people in the same scenario. The first one is basically a sinner, namely, like a secular person, non-Christian sinner. Then he talks about a Christian who has not really fulfilled his duties and vows as a Christian and has not taken his baptismal vows seriously or just the work of a Christian seriously within his life. And then he talks about a just man. And they're all three on the deathbed. So he has. So we'll start with the death of the sinner, the one who is not a Christian on his deathbed. We hear a lot of times, and we've talked about this before on the show, Dave, that there are times where some people who say, like, I'm religious but not spiritual, or I'm not religious but I'm spiritual, and maybe when I get older I'll try to figure it out, and on my deathbed. Try to look for loopholes and
looking for loopholes.
And so anyway, so Alphonsus Liguori really combats this idea of having a deathbed conversion or banking on a deathbed conversion.
I thought his points here were so strong.
Yes. So he basically says when you have news of death, the thought of being obliged to take and leave everything in this world, you have a remorse of conscience, the time is lost. Of wanting the time at present, but you don't really have it any longer. The right of divine judgment, you know that a judgment's about to come upon you. The unhappy eternity that awaits possibly you as a sinner. And all the things that that form a horrible tempest, which will confuse the mind, will increase his apprehensions, and thus, full of confusion and distress, the dying sinner will pass to this other world. So it's really interesting because he basically says, because of all of the anxiety that you have, because you're on your deathbed, you're realizing the judgment is about to come, where you possibly are, that it actually mentally confuses you and gives you so much angst that you actually can't think clearly enough to actually know what to do.
Yeah.
And we've seen this before, right? Like at least I've seen this in my own personal life, right? If there's a something that happens, like you get in a car wreck. And you have not thought about, like, hey, what should I do if I get in a car wreck? You get in a car wreck. Your anxiety is going up. Your blood is pumping. Your adrenaline's pumping through your veins. And you're trying to figure out, like, what am I doing? Am I okay? Is this passenger okay? Is the other person okay? How damaged is my car? What do I need to do? And, like, you know, like, from a mental, like, from just a normal, like, if I asked you today, like, hey, what should you do if you get in a car wreck? You're like, well, you got to make sure everybody's okay, and then you got to find your insurance card, and then you have to call the police, and you have to write a report, and, like, you would know the steps to take. But in that moment, you're so bewildered and like confused that you actually don't know the steps to take because of the anxiety and, sure. and the adrenaline.
Sure.
Very similar, I would imagine, would be this kind of same feelings that you would have on your deathbed.
Yeah. And
maybe that's an analogy that, I mean.
And I think a lot of people, I don't know if they're like actively planning, like on my deathbed, I'll convert. But I think with it's more something like, you know what? I'll just get to that later. You mm-hmm. know, like they probably intend to do it before they get to their deathbed, I hope. But the point that I thought he made here was that was like so strong. And like, this is just a natural, this is just a natural reality. It's not a supernatural thing, but that it's very likely on your deathbed, your mind will be so weakened by the illness that you have. Maybe you're in a lot of pain and you're just not simply capable of even thinking about like assessing your life very well at that. Like what kind of mental capacities are you going to have?
Right.
And if you can't have a moment of where I'm going to recognize the sins I've committed, I'm going to be sorry for them. I'm going to repent and ask for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
God is all merciful, but you know you've had a whole lifetime to repent.
Yeah,
you know, and you have squandered it, and
that's some of the anxiety that happens, right? It's a thread that is woven throughout all three of these considerations, is that of time wasted mm-hmm. that you have to be accounted for.
Yeah.
He talks about like, you know, you have all these bad habits that you've built up, right? These vices that you've held on to and you've built, like, you know, cause habit is a virtue is a habit of doing the good over and over again. A vice is basically the habit of doing bad over and over again. Right. Mm-hmm. And he says like to conquer bad habits, Saint Augustine had to fight against them for 12 years before he was able to get out of the ruts of these vices. And he says like, so what makes you think that on your deathbed or as you know that you're going to be dying, that you're going to be able to get out of these bad habits like that?
Yeah.
Which I found like to be very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously God can do anything he wants. He can give you supernatural grace that is outside of the norm.
Right.
Also a very risky thing to be banking on.
You can't bank on it.
Right. So he talks about like how the sinner will try to seek God at death, but he will not find him because of this confusion in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks about the anguish of the dying sinner, right? That the dying man will be tempted not by one, but by innumerable devils who will labor for his damnation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, when he talks about like all these vices and the thing, like this moment of death and like all these the evil ones know that this is the moment that if I can get you to despair at this moment, mm-hmm. I have you forever.
Yeah, and people who have had near death experiences, this seems to be a common thing that goes along with it. And that there are people who say that they have seen the demons come for them. You know, and that they knew that that you belonged, that this person belonged to them by right. You know, like yeah. It was like a legal contract. It's like, no, he committed these sins. His soul belongs to me. You know? And they came to us like.
Listen to this. This is exactly, he says like, these are like some of the demons. He says, we are your offspring. We will not leave you. We will accompany you to the other world and we'll present ourselves with you to the eternal judge. The dying man will then wish to shake off such enemies, but to get rid of them, he must detest them. He must return sincerely to God. His mind is darkened and his heart is hardened, mm-hmm. and he's not capable of doing so. This reminds me of C.S. Lewis's The Lizard on the Shoulder.
Yeah, it does. It's a lot like that.
We actually have Dr. Kyle gave us that to put up in
yeah.
the studio.
Yeah, no, from where I sit, I see it all the time.
Yeah.
There's another book. This is a book that you and I both read a long time ago.
Struck by Lightning.
Struck by Lightning. And In the very beginning is her death of this book. It's her. It's a true story that she recounts. And that was like something I think she does really well in the book is talk about how at her point in this life, because it was when she was much younger, she was distracted. Like her focus in her life was on looks, appearances, mm-hmm. vainglory, like what kind of jewelry do I have on? And she remembers dying on this hospital bed, worried that the nurse is going to steal my bracelet as soon as I die. Like that's what she was thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing, like she said that Jesus was in the room, like wanting to talk to her. And she was telling him, Jesus, hang on.
She's going to steal my bracelet.
Like she's like this, I need to figure out how to like, about my bracelet. You know, and the point that she makes in the book, which I think is a similar point that Alphonsus is making, that Thomas A. Kempis makes in his book as well, that if you have lived a life focusing on a certain thing, and that is the thing that consumes your thoughts, it consumes your energies, it consumes, like that's your the way you're focused and it's your goals or whatever.
Yeah.
Then what makes you think that at the last moment of your life, you're not going to still be focused on those things? If you think, oh, I'm just going to shake off the illusions that I have wedded myself to my entire life, in that moment,
right?
Then I won't care
I'll
about...
I'll have a clear mind at
I won't
point.
Care about yeah. my... I care about money now, but I won't care about money then, or I won't care about my appearance then. I won't, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. Then you're just fooling yourself.
Yeah.
The things that we... And the people that we turn ourselves into now, we're going to be that same person at that moment of our death.
Yeah.
And so if we don't make a habit of repentance, then we won't have that habit then.
That's right. Yeah. So he talks about how, again, just to recap, the sinner goes to seek God at death, but he cannot find him. The anguish of the dying sinner. And the last one is we must seek God when we can find him. So seek him when you have the opportunity. And when on the other side of the break, he makes this beautiful little saying that I think is very apropos. So
wonderful.
We'll be right back. Dude, you're getting so good at pushing my button.
I also think so. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Talking about death. It is Lent.
If you die before you die, then you won't die when you die.
Yes, indeed. It is a good time to die. I try to die every day, a little bitty, just a little bit. Just a little bit. Not too much. But every day.
Okay. So, yeah. So, we're talking about, we're giving three considerations. One being the secular man. One being kind of a non-practicing Christian, if you will. And then also a just man, right?
Uh-huh.
So, we're almost done with the secular guy, the man. He does say this kind of ends on a little bit of hope here. It gives a little bit of hope. He says, like, we must seek God when we can find him. Right. And so he says that it is true that whatsoever hour the sinner is converted, God promises to pardon him. So mm-hmm. he says, listen,
totally.
God's mercy is there for you.
Yeah.
So if you can, like if you have the mental capacity to be sorrowful.
And it doesn't, it only takes like just an, like a one, like a movement of the will, like
right.
one tiny movement of the will.
Boom.
In the direction of repentance.
That's right.
God is so merciful.
And he...
You yeah. don't deserve it. You've, like, this...
And
this
none of us do.
This person has lived, but in this situation especially, you've lived a terrible life up to the moment of your death. You've been a miserly, like terrible...
Scoundrel.
Scoundrel, terrible person who didn't give a care about anything except yourself, himself. And then at that last moment, if he has that act of the will... In that direction of repentance, he can be saved. He can
like,
be saved.
And God promises to pardon him.
Yeah.
But he does say, but he has not promised that sinners will be converted at death. On the contrary, he has often protested that they who live in sin shall die in sin.
Yeah. And I think it can be a little scandalous, you know, to hear a saint especially say, for the people at their death who go looking for God, that they won't find him.
Right.
I think it can be scandalous. It's not because God doesn't want to forgive them.
Or it's not because God's not there. It's not because God's not there.
Right. He's there. He wants to forgive them. But these people don't know how to look for him. They don't know how to find him. Again,
sin makes you stupid.
Right. And they look for him in things that are not him, mm-hmm. like vainglory, mm-hmm. appearances, money, you know. And so I just wanted to say that because it's not like God is like hiding from them.
Right. That's exactly right. So he says, God at present gives you this time. Thank him for it. And apply it an immediate remedy to the evil that you have done. So he's talking to this. So he's basically saying, this guy who's on his deathbed, a secular man, if you're reading this right now and you're not actually on your deathbed, but you're considering it, he says, like, listen, this is a gift from God right now, reading this and coming to this realization. Thank God for this. And adopt by all means of finding yourself in the grace of God when death comes, for when there will be no more time to acquire his friendship. So he basically says, like, hey, listen, this is an opportunity for you right now. Because here's what I love about Alphonse Glory and how you know that he is acting and writing upon in true charity is because he makes very bold stances, right? But then he also says, he kind of, at the end, gives you hope, which is different than a lot of people who are just trying to make outlandish claims just for the sake of the outlandish claim, right? Just mm-hmm. to kind of
right.
be popular for the sake of this bold claim. He makes these claims, but then at the end says, like, no, there's hope. Thank God for this moment and capitalize on it. Seize this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool at the very end. You know, he basically a little taste of evangelization at the very end there.
Yeah, no, totally.
So then he goes into the next consideration, and he's talking about basically a dying Christian who has been careless about the duties of religion and has thought but little of death. So this is, I think, in my opinion, a lot of people.
Yeah.
Including myself, a lot of time.
I was just thinking about myself.
And so he's talking a lot about the Christian who doesn't think about his death, has not taken his faith seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing he talks about, his first point is it's a sad state of the world, worldling at death, of this person at death, because he's been given this gift, right? Of Christ, you know, yeah. in his church.
Yeah.
And it says, remembrance of a disorderly life he has until remembrance of the disorderly life he has until then led in spite of so many calls and lights from God, of so many admonitions, thank you, from spiritual fathers, and of so many resolutions made but never executed or afterward neglected. Now, that like hits home for me.
Especially that last part.
Yeah, that hits home for me so many times because I can't tell you how many times in my mind, like, I'm headed to confession. I'm like, Lord, I'm so sorry for my sins, and as soon as I get out of confession, I'm going to do this and this, and I'm going to just change all these things. And then I get out of confession, and I'm just so thankful for his mercy, and I do my penance, and I'm going home, and my, like, will is so weak.
Yeah.
Because all those things that I was, like, wanting to do, I just don't do.
Right.
They fade away. I neglect them.
Yeah. When I was, like, you know, after college, you and I both kind of came back to the faith and really, like, diving into it and loving it. And I remember getting to the point where thinking, like, my will is pretty strong. Like, I'm pretty good, you know, like. And now I just look back on that and it's like, what an idiot, you know, like, because now I've come to a much deeper knowledge of myself, and I know that I am pathetic.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
You are. You really are. Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
I know. It's hard for me. It's part of, like, my sanctification to have you as a best friend.
And that's good. I'm glad I can help somehow.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, without God's grace, without basically him just doing all the work, I will instantly fail.
Oh, absolutely.
Instantly.
And it's like the things that you struggle with, or that you have, you struggle with in the past maybe, and you don't struggle with anymore. Like, you cannot think, I have conquered this. No. You know, this will never be a problem again.
Right.
Because like the...
Because it, you absolutely could do it again.
Yeah. And so this Christian who is on his deathbed, he kind of talks to him and says like, what would it have cost to have avoided such occasions of sin that you've committed? Like broken off friendships, having to frequent like the confession, avoided like inconveniences of your soul, which is so important to do. He's just like, what would it have actually cost? And he, like, really kind of plants the seed of like, you know, the things that are really like not good for you that are, that you're holding on to right now, whether it be friendships or certain vices, gambling, drinking, pornography, like whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
What, like, what is it that, that you're holding on to that if you would have just cut that out of your life?
Yeah, when I read this, it did strike me, this exact, that exact line, that the things he mentions, they actually are not nothing. I mean, like, breaking off a friendship
is hard.
I mean, like, actually, he's listing things that have a big cost.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, actually, it seems like, well, that would cost me a lot, because if you're right now still living your life, not yet on your deathbed, right, you think, like, oh, I couldn't do that.
Right.
That would cost me too much. But then I love the way he puts the context and then shows, like, okay, well, now it's going to cost you a lot more.
Yeah, but and I remember going through this like mental struggle after college because I had some really good friends that I cared about and like really thought like we're going to be friends forever.
Yeah.
And I realized I can't, like, for my salvation's sake, I can't be friends with them. And I really love them. Like, I care about them. Sure. And I want, like, I like them, you know, and I want to hang out with them. But I realized I cannot be a saint and hang out with this person. Because it's not because of them. I'm just so weak.
Yeah.
Because I cannot step up. I'm not a big enough man to step up. And I had to cut out those people. And that was hard, man. I remember Colin Haley, you know, we were still dating. And, you know, I was like kind of pouring my heart out to her, like coming to this realization that, hey, some of my friends that I've been best friends with for years, I just don't, like, I no longer get to be friends with them.
Yep. Yeah, I had to do that too.
And it's really hard.
But you have to.
But you have to do it.
And you might, some people might say, like, well, you're just, you know, you should try to be a good friend to them and like bring the faith to them or whatever. And you just can't do that. I mean,
I can't give what I don't have.
Maybe, I mean, everybody, there's different circumstances, but sometimes you just gotta get out. Maybe you can go back someday.
Yeah, and some of these friends I still text. And so it's not like I've cut all contact off from them.
Right, right.
But I just had to change my lifestyle. I've had to change and I think that has led me to. The thing is the Lord desires you, and He's constantly going after you, desiring you to come to Him and calling you to Him. And so if you cut out certain things in your life, what He's going to do is actually give you the necessary means for your salvation. Right, so what He's going to end up doing is you're going to end up actually finding other people in your life that is actually going to grow in friendship with Christ. But that's not something to take lightly. I think it's tough.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one is desiring the worldly at death. Like, so this is kind of like what you're talking about, even this last time, right? With struck by lightning, the gal.
Yeah.
You know, it says, how ardently shall we desire at death the time which we have now squandered away? Again, another thread that he talks about. And we're out of time on Catholic Radio. Thank you to all our local Catholic radio stations that pick up the Catholic Man Show. If you are listening and have a Catholic radio station in your area, reach out to us. We provide our content for free. You can go check out thecatholicmanshow.com. We have almost 400 episodes or more. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
But so he's talking about how, like at death, the things that you've considered very important in your life, you know, up until this point, all these sudden, worldly, they're you not. Realize, oh, none of these things are actually important.
Right. You're not taking any of them with you. You've like worked like all the money you have.
Right.
Or even like the clothes you're wearing at the time you die.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked so hard for all of this stuff, and it's just like, and now you're just dead.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
you just gotta get
in that moment, it's easy to look and see how it's like, why did I do that? Why did I spend so much time
doing this
on working on money or stuff? You know, and now on your deathbed, you see, like, what a waste of time.
Yeah, he actually says, alas, during this life, these fools love their folly, but at death, they open their eyes and confess that they've all been fools.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, don't send us an email. Obviously, you need money, okay? I'm not saying, like, don't work for money. I think
no,
you know what I mean.
But it's a disordered desire.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So he talks about how, since then, you now have to leave to avoid a death full of terror. Begin instantly to repair the past. Do not wait for that time in which you can make little preparation for judgment. Do not wait for another month nor another week. Perhaps this light, which God in his mercy gives you now, may be the light, the last light, and the last call for you. So again, he's kind of like still ending on this like hope. He's like, listen, hey man, this could be it.
Man, that's something to think about all the time. Like, because we will all have like a last light or a last call
mm-hmm.
from him in this life, mm-hmm. you know, and like maybe it won't even be on your deathbed.
Right. Because you may not even have a deathbed.
You just might be walking down the sidewalk.
Right.
And then you're squished on the sidewalk.
By a giant meteor.
Meteor. Bus.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Billboard. Maybe a billboard just like
crashes down.
Maybe it wasn't put together right.
Sewer drain.
And a little breeze. And it just
wormhole
flattens you.
Yeah.
You don't even see it coming.
So many endless.
Wormhole, like, that'd have to be a big worm.
So the last point that he makes about this, you know, kind of non-practicing Christian or one mm-hmm. that doesn't take seriously is the tardy regrets of the dying person. And what he means by that is, he says, I could have had led a life of happiness in the grace of God. And after so many years that he gave me, what do I find but torments, distrust, fears, remorse of conscience, and accounts to render?
Mm.
It's like in the Screwtape letters, like, you know, he comes to the realization that I didn't do the things that I wanted to do, nor the things that made me happy. You know, mm-hmm. he's like realized, like, this whole time, I didn't do the things that I ought to do, nor the things that I should have done. Or that I ought to do or wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is also the big thing that I think we need to do a better job with marketing or something, that the Christian life actually will make you happy. It's the only way for you to be happy, and it will be it will give you profound, deep happiness. Right. And because
but that doesn't mean that it doesn't be suffering.
It doesn't look like it.
Right.
From the outside, you see these pious people going to church. And, you know, like, sometimes they don't look super happy. You look at some of the saints, like, even the ones we have, like, actual pictures of.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them look like a little
grumpy.
Grumpy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little melancholic.
Yeah. Some of them do. one of the Fatima children. I forget which one, but like they just have like this
scowl.
It's a straight up scowl in this picture. It's pretty funny, but that's something that we need to just like have. Like, you got the kerygma and you've got the why, you know, and like those things have to go together, because people need to know I am happy. I'm happy because I'm a Christian.
And that doesn't mean you're not going to have suffering. That's not going to mean, like...
No, but...
You're actually even going to have...
But you know what? You're going to have suffering whether you're a Christian or not.
I mean,
you're not getting you're not getting away from suffering.
Right.
But because I'm a Christian, now, like, the suffering doesn't bother me as much, you know?
Right. Okay, so we've gone over the secular person, we've gone over kind of the Christian who hasn't taken their faith seriously, and now to end on a very positive note, he has a consideration of the death of the just. And so he talks about the death of a just man is a rest. You know, that he may rest mm-hmm. in him.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
It's not a panic. It's like a... Yeah. It's a reward.
Right. He talks about how, viewed according to the senses, death excites fear and terror, like we've talked about before. But he says, but viewed in the eyes of faith, it is consoling and desirable. Right? And so St. Ambrose, actually, he quotes St. Ambrose here, and he says, a present life is given us not for repose, but that we may labor and by our toils merit eternal glory. You know, so we're made so that we may rest in him, mm-hmm. so that we may be truly leisurely in him for all of eternity. But right now, you know, God only gives us a certain amount of time to work, to grow his, you know, to build his kingdom up. And as Mother Angelica says, like, he's only giving you so much time, so get cracking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what she said, you know.
She was hilarious.
She was the best, yeah. But he says, like, the saint is not afflicted at biding an eternal farewell to honors, for he always hated them and considered them to be what they really are, smoke and vanity. He's not afflicted in leaving relatives, for he loved them only in God. And at death, he recommends them to his heavenly Father, who loves them even more than he does. And having a secure confidence in salvation, he expects to be better to be able to assist them from heaven than on earth. Like, to me, that was like, man, that hits so hard, right?
Totally.
Because this is so hard to really think about as a father, as a husband, and as a father, right? Because you're like, imagine you're on your deathbed, you have your wife and your children, maybe your grandchildren, maybe great grandchildren, they're all around you, and you're just like, I just want to be with them, and I love you guys. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, no, you love them only in God. Like, that's what even, it's very biblical, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, excuse me, that your love comes from God, and that, whoever says they, you know, you have to hate your mother and hate your brother, hate your father, and come follow me It's like, well, because you only love them, you love them through and in God,
mm-hmm.
and that it's just such a pride killer in my thought, you know, thinking about it, that oh, like, I can actually do more for them when I'm alive than when
it's
I'm in heaven.
Obi-Wan Kenobi-esque.
Yeah,
you can't win, Darth. If you strike me down,
I
shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
That's, yeah. But, I mean, it's so true that, like, a prayer of a righteous man is just...
Availeth much.
And so if you're in heaven, you're going to be able to do a lot more for your family...
Totally.
...than here on earth.
Yeah.
So the second point he wants to say is that the death of a just is a victory.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, this is the end of man, right? This is like, this is what
you did it.
You've ran to
you
win
did
the
it.
Race, right? And that, like, he makes this very interesting point that to have this very healthy distrust in self, and that once you die, it's like, good, I no longer have the opportunity to disappoint or turn my back on God.
I can trust myself again.
Right. Which I think is very, like, interesting. Like,
it's very,
like,
true, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, at least in my experience.
Yeah.
St. Catherine of Siena, when she was on her, like, she was in her last moments, one of the last things she said is, rejoice with me, for I quit this land in pains and go to a place of peace. And so I think, like, I think, again, C.S. Lewis talks about how this, like, on the deathbed, that, like, both the angels, like, may, like, at your death, both the angels and the demons are rejoicing. The angels are rejoicing that you've won the race, and the demons are rejoicing that you're out of the war.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Hopefully that's what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Like,
hopefully the demons aren't rejoicing that, like, we got him.
Well, the angels would not be rejoicing at that point either.
Like,
it's both of them have to be
right.
happening, right? That the demons are grateful, like, good, he's out of the spiritual warfare. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when Padre Pio died, how pumped were the demons you know, or St. John Vianney, or, you know, some of these people, like St. Teresa of Lisieux, like how pumped were the demons that they are no longer in this spiritual, like,
except, you know, to that last point, that now they're in heaven.
And they can do even more.
And now they can do more, right.
Right. So the last one, we'll get to this last one. The third point that he talks about is that the death of a just is the entrance into life.
Mm-hmm.
That the death of a saint is called their birthday, because at death they are born to that life of bliss which will never end. And that, you know, the death is really, like, what does Teresa of Lisieux say? That, like, this is just a journey to mm-hmm. the final destination, right?
Right. Right.
This is just the ship being sailed to the final end.
Yeah, the saints are more alive than we are.
That's right. Yeah,
because they're with God.
And God is a God of the living, not of the dead.
Right, but you mean God is the source of life, and they're there, like, in union with him.
Right. And so again,
full of life.
This is why saints' feast days are on their death. On their the day of the death.
In most cases, by far.
It's because, like, this is the day that they probably entered into their eternal reward.
Right, right.
And today is the day that, you know, my grandfather passed away. So, again, please keep him in your prayers. Because mm-hmm. maybe, God willing, that, you know, he is in heaven right now and can intercede for all of us.
Dude, I can't wait to go to heaven.
I think it's going to be awesome. Yeah.
I think you're right.
I think it will be. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this tonight is because I actually can see, like, as I was reading this, I saw myself in all three of these men.
Yeah.
You know, there was not a point in time where I was reading, you know, the secular man, the Christian man who's not taking his faith seriously, and the just man. There wasn't a point in time where, as I was reading it, I couldn't see at least a little bit of me in each man.
Right, and that's the point.
Right.
Yeah, that you would see yourself in them because, yeah, we have a little bit of all of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, as you progress in the spiritual life, you're more and more the just man. But you'll, you know, probably never not be the sinner.
Right. I mean,
God's grace is capable of perfecting man in this life.
Mm-hmm.
But
doesn't mean that you won't sin.
Statistically speaking.
Yeah, you can't get out of this. Yeah. So. Anyway, any last concluding thoughts? Final thoughts?
Just, like, stop sinning.
Go to confession.
Go to confession. Definitely, it's like, it's Lent. Go to confession.
Take your family to confession.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a good father, take your kids to confession with you.
Exactly.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.